In the recently adopted state budget, the legislature and Governor Andrew Cuomo had more than $30 million to play around with as a result of a court settlement reached with a company for its role in contributing to our nationwide opioid crisis. The money is just a fraction of what New York will likely receive as cases are pursued against additional companies, including drug manufacturers. To discuss how the state used its recent allotment and how future funds should be spent, we spoke Monday afternoon to Ashley Livingston, co-chair of Friends of Recovery Warren and Washington Counties. Welcome to the show, Ashley. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you for having me, David. I appreciate it.
So for starters, can you explain the settlement in February that led McKinsey and Company to agree to about $573 million in payouts across the country, with about $32 million getting forked over to the state of New York?
I wouldn't even say that it was forked over, right? So in 2019, Letitia James and other attorney generals began suing opioid manufacturers as well as distributors. One of those was McKinsey and Company. So McKinsey is the first one to settle out, as you said, you know, leading up to this as well. We will likely be getting a lot more as, you know, other companies like Johnson & Johnson, Purdue, Walmart begin to settle out. So the $32 million is not because McKinsey and Company want to just give it to New York out of the kindness of their heart. This $32 million has a human cost attached. So myself, Avi Israel, Linda Ventura, you know, we've really been advocating since the beginning. Originally, Senate had included language in their one house, and that was taken out. And so essentially, you know, as advocates, what we ask is that they would not supplant general funds with this money. And that ended up being exactly what happened. So in 2019, like I said, they began suing these companies for the damages that they caused. And like, it just really hurts my heart because I know that, you know, in the scheme of things, the $32 million is not a lot of money. However, that $32 million has a human cost attached to it. So I continue to go to funerals and bury my friends. And as I mentioned, Avi and Linda, they both lost their children. And Susan Solomon. So, you know, we've paid like the ultimate cost. And so for them to supplant funds was kind of a smack in the face.
Yeah. So based on statements from the State Division of Budget and State Senator Pete Harkin, who's the chairman of the Senate's Committee on Alcoholism and Substance Abuse, it appears that $11 million of the settlement money was used for medication-assisted treatments in prisons. About $1 million went for a syringe exchange program and the purchase of naloxone to combat overdoses, and the rest of the money, the majority, was swept into the state's general fund, basically a big pool of cash to fund whatever in the state's $212 billion budget. What's your reaction to this?
So I'm outraged because, you know, as I said, like the overdistribution and the overprescription of opioids is what really put us into this opioid overdose epidemic. And it has cost more than 500,000 individuals their lives over the last decade. So the fact that, you know, these monies were intended to support current services and also like expand new services, right? Two-thirds of them are going to, I don't know, I guess paved roads or whatever the case may be, because the state still hasn't been very clear on that. And the diversion of the funds, it was just a very terrible decision. And we, not even I, we advocates have to make sure that this never happens again, because the timing of this diversion is made even worse because we're in a global pandemic and overdoses have begun spiking. You know, I think our most recent federal government report was more than 88,000 individuals have died from overdose. So how could they think that this money should be spend on anything other than preventing more overdoses?
You mentioned earlier the Senate One House budget, which is essentially a proposal of priorities that the majority, in this case the Senate Democrats, advanced prior to the adoption of the budget. And we also had the Assembly Democrats advance their own One House budget as well. Can you talk a little bit about these two proposals in terms of what they had hoped to do? I mean, was the Senate proposal in line with what you were looking for in terms of a dedicated fund and increased investments into treatment and prevention?
So it was. There was some language that we were not comfortable with. Like, the original language did not include non-supplantation language in the Senate One House.
And can you explain what that means? Basically just not replacing, you know, existing funding?
It's not withholding general funds. So it's used as a supplement. So essentially, like, let's just say, for instance, they were going to give $792 million to addiction services. Essentially, with the 21, what they did is they gave us the 21 of McKinsey money, but they withheld 21 million. So these need to be additional funds, not replacing general funds. Does that explain it?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay.
And how about on the Assembly side?
So Assembly only dealt with the McKinsey funds. But again, during budget, you know, our governor has a lot of power. I wasn't necessarily opposed to them taking it out of budget. However, I would have liked for both houses to have non-supplantation language with the McKinsey monies, because that was all that was appropriated during this budget. So we are working with PhilStack and in the Assembly to, you know, have this language in terms of the specialty fund. There were some gripes that we had with the advisory board, just in terms of the governor even having, you know, four appointees. Like, we don't really feel like he should have any, because he's kind of showed his cards. And so I'm a little disgruntled that he will even have any say of how this is spent. And I understand, you know, yes, there was a cost to the opioid epidemic to the state, but I guess what I would like to see then is, like, how much did they really spend on their campaign? And, you know, did that 21 million that they kept this time, did that cover what they put out?
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're discussing the state's use of opioid settlement money in the state budget and what they might do in the future. And our guest is Ashley Livingston, co-chair of Friends of Recovery, Warren and Washington Counties. So moving to the future, you know, the money we're talking about right now is $32 million for New York. How much money could New York be looking at in the future?
Like, I don't have a definitive answer, right? Because I think each company is going to settle differently. Mm-hmm. But it could be, you know, like $1 billion. And one of the proposals that Senate had in their One House was also the combining of the addiction and mental health agencies. And then this proposal was also removed. And I think that that was, like, another bad decision, because essentially we really need, you know, one system, a better system, so we take the, you know, best from both. And this money could really help develop these new programs and services and support. So I think moving forward, we need a specialty fund. I think that advocates, that includes family members and people in recovery with lived experience, need to be on this advisory board. It doesn't necessarily need to be made up of, you know, legislators and governor appointees. I think, you know, the people that are in the trenches doing the work are really, you know, we know the needs, we know the barriers. 1 in 10 people get into treatment. So, you know, I just think it's really important that we use this on innovative ideas, transportation, housing. There's so many things that, you know, these monies can go towards in helping other people not meet the same fate as a lot of my friends.
You obviously are very passionate about this issue. So how did this become a fight for you?
So I'm a person in sustained recovery. For me, that means that I haven't used a mood or mind altering substance in, you know, 7.5 years. I was very much prescribed into addiction. I am also a survivor of domestic violence. So in my junior year, I was prescribed OxyContin, and that's how my, you know, journey to addiction began. I have lost far too many friends to this disease. And honestly, like, I am to the point where I'm sick of going to funerals. I'm sick of, you know, having to comfort grieving parents. I'm sick of looking at my friends' children who, you know, maybe have a necklace of their parents' ashes and that's all they have. So about 6 years ago, I really got involved and decided to turn, you know, my pain that I had experienced into a purpose. And so that means like advocating for better policies and procedures and, you know, like having recovery centers and transportation and housing and all of these barriers that we experience. So for me, it's really personal. And, you know, it really comes down to, you know, taking what I experienced. I'm a certified peer recovery advocate as well. So I experience it still, the barriers that still exist, you know, 10 years in. And so I really just want a better New York where New Yorkers can be happier and healthier.
The pandemic obviously set back a lot of public health initiatives, like, as you mentioned, the opioid crisis and the effort to combat that. Prior to the pandemic, would you say New York was heading in the right direction or the wrong direction in terms of responding to the opioid epidemic?
We were making progress, right, in the right direction. I would say that there's still a lot of barriers that are there, and the system is still very broken. And I don't think, you know what I mean, that the global pandemic either exacerbated that but it was just more like the symptoms with individuals, right? I think that New York has a long way to go if we really want to, you know, talk about combating, you know, addiction, because that's essentially like what the campaign was, right? There's a lot more that needs to be done. Really meeting people where they're at, having person-centered care, individualized care. You know, and we're starting to do some of those things. We're seeing peers. However, you know, I think until we integrate the two services, because, you know, there's a lot of people that struggle with substance use that also struggle with mental health. So until we really reimagine, right, this new agency, the Office of Mental Health, Addiction and Wellness, and we really have those core competencies, I think that we're going to be a long way off, because we can't keep pouring money into things that are maybe not working and kind of haven't shown as much efficacy as they should. So I think, you know, recovery is the solution, and recovery looks very different for every individual. You know, I know people that are in recovery and have never darkened the door of, you know, a treatment center. I know people that are in recovery and they don't attend mutual aid meetings. Like, I think that we really just need to focus on that person-centered care and begin funding that, right? Like, we talk about celebrating and elevating all pathways, but when it really comes time to put our money where our slogans are, we don't. Because I know too many harm reduction services that have been grossly underfunded. Mental health and substance use are always underfunded. So I think, you know, it's really time to be innovative and put our money into new things.
Well, we've been speaking with Ashley Livingston. She is the co-chair of Friends of Recovery, Warren and Washington Counties. Ashley, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
And if you want to connect with Ashley's group, you can find the Friends of Recovery, Warren and Washington Counties on Facebook.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.